Well, we reconvene here a mere 6 hours after we last left each other to talk about the rest of the NBA playoff picture. Is there a series that most intrigues you that you wanted to start with, Danny?
I would say a good place to start is Rockets-Wolves. I am very interested in the way that series is going to play out. And we talked about this a little bit last night, but why I'm concerned about this series for the Wolves, who obviously should be thrilled they made it in despite Jimmy, you know, after Jimmy Butler's injury and his in-process recovery. But what Houston does is they focus on the weak link. They get the weak link involved in the primary action. They get that guy on the player in question, and then they attack. And Minnesota has some strengths. I think Jimmy Butler is a wonderful defender. Taj Gibson's a wonderful defender. But the ruthlessness of Houston's offensive attack, and that is in their DNA, it is their MO, I think that is going to be very dangerous for Minnesota.
Yeah, and Houston had the highest offensive rating of any team against another team in the season series, 129. I'm sorry, the second highest. Minnesota against Cleveland was the highest at 130. That was per John Schumann this morning. So Minnesota has not, in fact, succeeded at stopping the Wolves. And you'll recall, of course, that it was against Houston that Jimmy Butler sustained that meniscus injury. And for Minnesota, unlike a lot of teams, they really seem to try to avoid switching. Even on small, small pick and rolls, they'll try to avoid switching. That's what Tom Thibodeau believes in. That's what he's believed in going all the way back to his days with the Bulls when he'd have to match up with LeBron James on some of those same types of plays. And maybe the hope is that Thibodeau, with a lot of time to coach these guys up against one specific opponent, maybe he can get them there with the practice time in a way that they wouldn't be able to do against a normal team. Maybe a little bit more hope is that James Harden has not been shooting the three as well, hasn't been hitting that step back as much after March 1st, although for much of that time, Harden has had the MVP sewn up and Houston has had the number one seed in the playoffs sewn up, so they have not had as much urgency. And for when Houston has the ball, Jimmy Butler, you presume, is going to get the assignment on Harden. You might be concerned that, oh, that's going to kill his offense, but they at least have plenty of other guys who can create shots on this team for him. How do you think Minnesota is going to look against Houston switching defense?
Well, I mean, the weakness of a switching defense, and we've seen this in various series over the last couple of years, is against individually dominant offensive players. And Minnesota has at least two of those guys. And, you know, if either Teague or Wiggins is feeling it, that number can rise significantly from there. And then Jamal Crawford. So the big question for me is not necessarily whether Minnesota can score. They've been more successful offensively this season than we expected, largely due to their personnel rising. It's whether they will give the right guys the ball, because what Houston can do is they can have a lot of kind of similarly capable players on somebody like Jimmy Butler. So will they do what Houston has accomplished largely this season? And, you know, for me, the guy who's going to have the advantage the largest proportion of time is going to be Karl-Anthony Towns. Will they just get Karl-Anthony Towns the goddamn ball?
Yeah, that's one question to me for sure. And, you know, Towns is at his best, you could say, in pick and pop, maybe even more so than he is as a post score. That's going to get taken away. And so presumably a lot of what they're going to want to do is pick and roll, get the switch, roll it down to Karl-Anthony Towns in the post. But the other thing that I've been very impressed with in Houston's scheme, there's actually been two of them. One is they've been playing this all year, so lots of switching behind the play. Houston, of course, you know, they're gonna be playing PJ Tucker at the four. I think we'll see a lot of Tucker ending up on Towns. We might even see Tucker guard Towns in the primary matchup a lot. In fact, that wouldn't surprise me to see that. And then you would have Taj Gibson or Capella guarding Taj Gibson, where he can be more active as a help defender protecting the rim. Tucker, I think, is one of the guys you might like to see matching up against Towns. Doesn't have the height or length to challenge Towns' jumper, but as a stout guy in the post who can avoid getting back down. I mean, we haven't seen anybody really be that successful avoiding getting back down by Towns, but I think if anyone can do it, it's Tucker. So that matchup, I think, is okay. What happens, though, when you end up getting a James Harden on Towns? Harden has held up okay in the post, but Karl-Anthony Towns is a different animal against than a lot of the guys that we'll see try to go at Harden. I mean, Karl Anthony Towns is a true center with a lot of post ability. And the second part, though, besides their ability to switch behind the play, which you could see a lot, right? You could see Capella switching on to Towns after the initial pick and roll gets Tucker off of him, if that's in fact the way they want to go when they have their starting lineup out there, is their ability to shrink the floor around any mismatches created by the switching.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I'm excited to see how Houston can, you know, when they concentrate those forms of attacks and whether Minnesota has any counters. And before I forget about it, one other thing that I think is going to be important in this series, and this is more of a personal evaluation than anything else, I trust that D'Antoni will play his best players and deploy them in the right circumstances more than Tom Thibodeau will, partially because I just trust Houston's talent more. You know, the fact that they can go about eight deep and all eight of those guys are capable. A lot of them are actually two-way players more so than Minnesota's. I think that they can make a lot of those lineups work, and I don't know how much we're going to see. I expect we'll still see a fair amount of the Harden-Paul stagger, so that will give Houston an advantage. Yes, Minnesota's going to play their starters a lot of minutes, but the non-starters that play for them, to me, aren't as good as Houston.
That's certainly the case, and Jamal Crawford, you imagine that anytime he is on the floor, they're going to hunt him with the what they like to do, getting the worst player involved in pick and rolls. He's Jeff Teague is another guy you think that they are probably going to go after to some degree as well on those, rather more so than Karl Anthony Towns. And while you're not necessarily going to get the switch, they're so good at getting downhill. I mean, Harden is just so smart at attacking when you don't switch, especially early on in games when he's really feeling spry. Sometimes he'll won't attack as hard late in games when he's kind of trying to run the clock down. But really, and I think Wiggins and Butler can both do an okay job on James Harden in an ISO. And we could also see Chris Paul just try to go at Jeff Teague. But if they're not going to switch anything, then you can also just go at Karl Anthony Towns, Taj Gibson, or God forbid, Gorgui Dieng, if he's on the floor, which he won't be for probably more than 10 minutes a game, maybe even less than that. Or Nemanja Bjelica is another guy that they can target for probably more than 10 minutes a game, maybe even less than that. Or Nemanja Bjelica is another guy.
Yeah, you and I have talked before, especially on the Twitter NBA show, about how the real test of a defense is not how many players can defend Harden capably, it's how many players you have on the floor that cannot. And that's exactly what concerns me about Minnesota.
That makes perfect sense. And so if it's Karl Towns, he has not really been that good as a conventional pick and roll defender. I actually wouldn't mind seeing him try and switch. We've seen him be effective against some pretty good players in that role. But, you know, I don't think Taj Gibson can keep up with Harden or Paul anymore. Maybe he could have 3-4 years ago. We saw him get torched by Jamal Murray last night. So just not a lot of good options for Tom Thibodeau. And maybe we could see, although he tried this earlier in the season, going with Jimmy Butler at the four to try and match up a little bit, Towns at the five. I'm not sure though then who you're adding as a perimeter player, because if you go with Crawford, now that's just another guy that can be attacked. So I think very, very little chance that the Wolves stop Houston. And then on the other side of the ball, you know, the Wolves offense is a very, very good offense, and I expect them to score efficiently against Houston with Luka Bamute out. He's going to miss at least the first round. It doesn't really have a timetable for return. They seem to think it's not as bad as it had been, but the first time when he missed a month, but he's gonna at least miss the first series and potentially the second. I don't think they're gonna need him in either of those two series, but he is really they've not been able to defend nearly as well without him in the rotation. So, you know, that's gonna mean more Joe Johnson. That's gonna compromise their defense quite a bit here. So I do think Minnesota's gonna be able to score, but the problem is, as good as their offense is, they're gonna be scoring two at a time, and Houston's gonna be scoring three at a time.
Yeah, and I think that ties in with, unless is there something else? Are you ready for predictions?
Well, I think the other thing we should talk about, as we so often have, is the issue of how are Minnesota's shots going to be distributed. Another thing that I think too, I think Towns could be successful against the switches, but then is the spacing going to be there? You know, that's the question. Are they going to really load to him and Minnesota won't have sufficient shooting? We've seen Minnesota, again, despite their efficiency, you know, they're a team that's going to take 23 point attempts a game, and that's probably just not going to be enough to keep up with them. Another thing too is Jeff Teague, historically in his time in both Indiana and Atlanta, going against a Cavs switching scheme, has really been unable to punish that. They've laid way off of him. They've dared him to shoot the three off the dribble. And while he's matured into a decent spot up shooter, he has never been able to make teams pay for going under on pick and roll or for switching him and then kind of laying off with the big man and daring him to shoot. So that's another little subplot that I will be watching here. Yeah, let's go for predictions here. It is your turn to go first.
So if Mbamute were healthy, I would feel much more confident in Rockets in five. I like Minnesota's talent. I just think Houston is a really bad matchup for them because of their specific strengths and weaknesses. That makes me queasier because Houston just doesn't have as many options. And obviously Minnesota has enough talent to win multiple games in the series. I could even see it going, you know, seven, maybe outside chance Minnesota wins. But I still feel like Houston in five is the most likely outcome. That there'll be a couple of coin flip games, and I just think Houston has better talent for those circumstances than Minnesota. And we saw Minnesota's offense break down a little bit last night. And if you do that against Houston, I think it just won't work out as well as it did against Denver.
If Luke were healthy, although I do think we talked about this during the regular season, that I probably would have been annoyed with them playing Joe Johnson or even Ariza too much over Luke. But if Luke were healthy, I'd be picking this as a sweep. I'll probably go Houston in five as well, but it's still a toss-up between Houston sweep and Houston in five. I would be very surprised if this went to six games. I felt bad just going for Houston sweep just to be different than you, so I will go Houston in five. Want to try and get a better feel for how these guys look in the playoffs. Minnesota is a really good team. It sucks for them. I think I would, in a lot of these series, I might have even considered favoring the Wolves, but this is just the one matchup. They lost the tiebreaker against San Antonio. That's what ended up killing them. That's how San Antonio at 47 wins playing Golden State. I don't know what I would have done if they had played Golden State. I would have picked that to be a very, very close series. I guess I still pick Golden State to win in seven, but I don't expect it to be as close of a seven. But Minnesota, I mean, they have no chance of stopping Houston right now. And I think that Houston's switching defense is, they are well positioned to take advantage of the lack of shooting that Minnesota has. And Minnesota's going to score really well, but just not quite well enough. And I think that Houston is going to put up just an absolutely monster offensive series. So I will go Houston in five as well. Where would you like to go next?
I was thinking the series that interests me the most is Thunder Jazz, and it is Thunder as the higher seed there, as the host seed, I guess is the better way to put it. And I'm just fascinated by these two teams playing each other. And I'll let you talk first because I'll say my theory after.
Yeah, this is going to be a fascinating series for a couple of reasons. Number one, Rudy Gobert against Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook is going to be able to get to the mid-range jump shot if he tries to go all the way to the rim. Not sure if that's going to work, although certainly you're going to see a lot of this. I mean, this is the perfect team to try this against. Steven Adams screening his own man and then Russ trying to get to the rim. Quinn Snyder certainly is going to try to have Rudy as ready for that as you can be, but it's very interesting because that's something that Adams excels at, and it goes against a lot of the instincts to just try to come over and help defense and find yourself screened. But I think a lot of this is going to come down to, is Russell Westbrook going to get and hit the open mid-range jump shot? Because Rudy Gobert is going to be there in drop coverage. They certainly try and force OKC and any other team into those mid-range shots, but Russ has shown that he can hit those sometimes, and he certainly is going to shoot a lot. I think we know that. We saw that last year in the playoffs, that he does have a little more firepower around him, but now that he's not going for averaging a triple-double, I think we'll see him be very aggressive. And then on the other end, Quinn Snyder, arguably their offense, in addition to the Warriors when Steph is healthy, but he's not right now. So I'd say of all the offenses in the playoffs, that the Jazz just force the defense to make more decisions and more reactions because they swing the ball from side to side. They run the most pick and rolls of anyone in the league. They keep trying to work, widen the gap until they can get an open three-pointer or something at the rim. And that's really going to challenge the defensive discipline of Oklahoma City, guys like Melo, guys like Russell Westbrook. And are those guys going to be able to lock in every possession to not make mistakes? And I think that's going to be a big part of it. Corey Brewer, we don't know what his status is going to be. He sustained a sprained knee yesterday, although supposedly was not limping much. He's supposed to maybe get an MRI, so we'll see whether he's going to play. And they actually need him, sad as that is to say, but he's another guy who can struggle sometimes with game plan discipline. So those are the two biggest things I'm going to be watching for on either end of the floor. But what sticks out to you here?
It is not quite as significant as the disparity in Minnesota versus their potential teams, but I think this is just a really rough matchup for the Thunder, because you brought up consistency for Oklahoma City's defense. The word that I'm going to use is attention to detail. I think that's really because they just, Utah creates not only so many decisions to make, but so many potential lapses. And that, I think, is biggest characteristic of Oklahoma City's flawed defenders are lapses. Like Russell Westbrook just loses his guy. And Utah, especially because they make teams work through the whole shot clock, I think they'll just be able to find something at another point. Another big swing element in this series is that the Jazz get back on defense. And so, yeah, if Oklahoma City forces a turnover, then that could be a different story. But off of a defensive rebound, I don't think Oklahoma City is going to be able to get as much. So that means they will play more in the half court. And they will certainly have their moments in the half court. You brought up Russell Westbrook's mid-range jump shot. I think that will determine the ceiling for Oklahoma City in this series. But I worry about the sustainability of Oklahoma City's offense. And then I have grave concerns about the sustainability of their defense.
That said, maybe not during the regular season, but I think Oklahoma City might have the two best players in the series. You can, and certainly what we've seen Paul George do in the playoffs the last couple of years, you might think that's true. Although he did have, was not as good last year in the playoffs as kind of his reputation would have indicated at times. I think that game four in particular was awful against any, like, airmailed that potential tying three-pointer by like 20 feet in that game four against Cleveland last year. But overall, George has been a special player in the playoffs. There isn't really that one guy for him to guard. I guess maybe that would be Donovan Mitchell. If he does guard Mitchell, that's really going to be a great chess match of how are they going to get Mitchell open to get George off him. George just will not be screened. But you're probably better running Paul George in pick and roll than you are trying to get him through off ball screens when he really can't be screened then. And also, I think OKC having the home court is a big deal. We have seen this Jazz team win on the road. They won, 1-5 and 7 last year against the Clippers, although the Clippers' home court advantage is not exactly what OKC's is.
Well, yeah, we're not as healthy as Oklahoma City. That's the way I meant to say it. There were some structural issues that led to that series having some weird home road splits. But you're right, home court will be significant for both of these teams. And I think this is the series where I have this feeling like Utah wins one of the first two, I'm going to feel a lot better about my prediction than if they don't, just because that could
That's what a prediction there, that in situations where 94% of teams win when they win the first two games at home, that you would feel better about OKC's chances really going out on a limb there.
Yeah, that's true. But I think that
sorry, because people do this all the time. It's not even necessarily, but just in general, people are like, oh yeah, you know, the series doesn't start until, you know, the road team loses the game. Well, in the case of when the home team wins the first two, I mean, now there's a little bit of a difference there, because a lot of those series when the home team wins the first two, it's like, you know, the 1-8 series or something, and the home team is just so much better anyway. So there's a little bit of selection bias in that stat. You know, if the teams it's an indication that the teams aren't equal, as opposed to like, oh, the teams are equal and this team won the first two at home. So, you know, I would give the Jazz a better chance, even if they lose the first two, than 6% in the series. But nonetheless, I mean, if you don't win one of those first two games as the road team, like, you're probably screwed.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to be very interested.
But anyway, yeah, sorry, I interrupted your point. So where were you?
That's okay. I think I'm going to pivot a little bit to it, but I want to see with Oklahoma City, they're basically everybody other than Patterson to a point that comes off their, and Felton, I guess, who comes off their bench. I'm not sure who they're going to use and how successful they're going to be. And with Utah, that team just exits. And I think that they will go after, not as zealously as some other teams, but I think that those weak points will become more noticeable. And I always worry about teams that have to spend a couple of games trying to figure out who they trust, especially if Brewer has to miss any time, because those adjustment and evaluation game can, like, all it's going to really take, I think, is one for Utah at the beginning of that to get an advantage. That said, I mean, you're right. The two best players in the series could absolutely be on the Thunder on a game-to-game basis. I mean, we could see Rudy have some big games, could see a series of different guys. But, I mean, Paul George has been a monster in the playoffs at the moment. So, yeah, this is a series that I have a feel on it, but I am openly acknowledging that my feel is there's kind of a parallel here, incidentally, to a series Paul George was in, where, like, that Indiana-Toronto series a couple of years ago, where it's like, okay, I think I know where this is going to go, but I'm not so wedded to being right on it. It's not like, let's say, the last one where I think I have a good idea. So I think one thing I want to ask you is just when these games, because there are certainly going to be some, when these games get close, who do you think has the advantage?
Yeah, well, we know the Jazz, Donovan Mitchell, 41% usage in the clutch, Russell Westbrook in the 40s, so it was like 60% last year, and then assisted on every other bucket. I do think that I would slightly favor OKC, but I'm not really that sure about that. I think it's so much is going to come down to, does Russell Westbrook's jump shot go in? When it does, he's awesome in the clutch. When it doesn't, he shoots his team right out of it. And I do think he's going to be able to get open. How much they're going to go to Paul George will be an interesting one. And then another thing too, when the Jazz have the ball, which we haven't talked about much yet, because you've got those two superstars going against the Jazz defense, and that's a juicy matchup. But when the Jazz have the ball, I expect OKC is going to score, okay. I don't think it's going to be amazing. They'll probably be like, 105 points per 100, something like that. But when the Jazz have the ball, they are a really variable offensive team. Are their three-pointers going to go down? They generally do a good job of getting those up. Are they going to go in? I think if you had to give me one stat, and this is true, of course, of many, many matchups and many, many games, but if you could tell me what the Jazz three-point percentage is going to be for the series, I feel like I'd have a pretty good idea of who is going to win it. And then the Jazz, OKC, they've got Melo, that he is not a good defender at all. Alex Abrines might have to get some time if Brewer is out now. Are the Jazz really going to go after, it's not really their style to just go after one guy in a high pick and roll, very set piece, stayed offense. But Quinn Snyder is, especially in a playoff series, I think we'll see a lot more stuff where within the flow of the offense, he's going to try and set it up eventually to go after someone like Melo. Stuff where you start with a pick and roll on one side, swing it to the other, and you get a pick and roll with Melo's man, that kind of stuff to attack the rim. Or get a three-pointer. Same thing with Russ. Can you get him to fall asleep on the weak side? Although Ricky Rubio is not necessarily the guy that is going to punish that. So those are the things I'd like to see offensively. I think the Jazz, those three-pointers are going to be there. And then, the Paul George versus Donovan Mitchell matchup, you have to imagine that's what it's going to be. They'll just put a smaller player on Ingles. And Paul George is not the guy you want to be going against, especially because he's not going to have to carry the main offensive load. And OKC is probably not going to switch much, and we'll just see Paul George try to guard Donovan Mitchell. I won't say one-on-one because there'll be a ton of screens involved, but that'll be really, really interesting to watch for me. Are we ready for predictions here? I guess the last thing to note here too is the regular season series between these teams was over in December, and so really very little predictive value. Robertson, guys like Gobert was out, I think, for at least two or three of the four games, so very little predictive value here in the regular season series. But it is my turn to go first on predictions.
Well,
right?
There's one quick thing I want to say. I want to see how Utah uses Derek Favors and whether he closes games. I think they're going to close four out, that they're going to have Crowder and Ingles.
Yeah, they will. They will.
So then that makes life a little bit, you could say it makes life a little harder for Melo, because I think they'll be using him less as on post-ups, because you could see certain teams just be like, ooh, we have Derek Favors on Melo, let's just post him up all the time. It feels like something Denver would have done last night. But I think that Utah is going to, that might actually lead to them taking some good advantage of it. But yeah, it is your turn.
I'm going to go OKC in seven. I think the home court, I think they're just the superstars. This is going to be a great chance for Rudy Gobert to try and prove that, hey, having a guy like him, that maybe, he is a top 10 type of player with what he can do defensively. Maybe they can just completely lock the Thunder down in this series. It's not exactly, when we've talked about Gobert before, when I had David Locke on and we talked about the top 10 players, this isn't quite the test I would have liked to have seen from him, because really the test to me is great shooters who can come off the pick and roll and shoot that three. Can they shut that guy down? But still a very good test. Westbrook has hurt Gobert at times in the past. They've also been able to stop Westbrook at times in the past. But I think the home court and just two superstars against one star slash superstar, we'll see, hopefully get a better idea of where Gobert is in this. And even if they aren't going to have Corey Brewer, I just think that you also look look at where if OKC can play Russell Westbrook more minutes now than they do in the regular season, they've still been so much better with him on the floor with that Westbrook-centric attack. So I will begrudgingly go with OKC. I probably would have gone with Utah if they had home court, but they do not.
Yeah, I'm really torn in this series just because I can appreciate a lot of what OKC does well, and the theory of them winning the series is very easy. It's very easy.
Come on, Blog Boy. Blog Boy, go with Utah. You know you want to.
Jazz and six. Yeah, Jazz and six.
Yes.
I think that they match up well. I think that they will be able to attack. We haven't seen Quinn Snyder in this kind of a playoff series. You know, that Clippers one was very, it was very weird and disjointed, and so is the Warriors one due to injuries. I think this is closer to kind of a full strength idea of what we can see with Quinn Snyder as a playoff coach. I'm excited for that. I think it'll be interesting. And the Brewer injury, I think, makes me, it steals my resolve a little bit on this, just because they don't trust any of the other guys. So if he is not only unable to play, obviously that's massively significant, but if, let's say, he's 85%, that creates problems for Billy Donovan. It creates problems for everybody else. So it's amazing that a buyout candidate that you and I both didn't particularly like has become that important to Oklahoma City, but them's the breaks.
Hey, value over replacement player, man. Yep. You know, the reason I didn't really even articulate it is, I kind of did, but it just feels to me that the history of these, oh man, how the hell are they doing it in the regular season teams, and not necessarily like surprise teams, but just teams where you look at them and they're like, hey, you know what, they don't really have like a traditional offensive superstar, how do they win games in the regular season? Oh, they just do it with such great team play and execution and blah blah. It just seems like those teams like don't seem to do that well in the playoffs. You know, it really is a superstar driven league, especially when you get into the playoffs, especially when you can get those guys more minutes. And so part of my pick is based on the fact that, you know, Utah just doesn't have that traditional star power.
Well,
and you'll recall that we picked,
but yeah, I trust their defense.
Yes,
I really trust their defense.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's certainly a reasonable point to take. And, you know, that's why I picked it in seven. I don't think this is clear cut at all. Why don't you drive this ship to our next port? What is our next series going to be?
Well, I think you can make an argument that it's the West, but I think we should go to the East at least once for now. And for me, the most interesting series out there is the 1-8 of Toronto versus Washington. A lot of this for me is just going to depend on when the Wizards kind of put it together and they have all this adjustment. John Wall didn't play and they had this weird loss to Orlando, which ended up being, to me, devastating, because I think they would have rather played either of the other two teams than ended up in the 2 and the 3. Washington, what I think is funny about this, we did our over-unders last week, the over-under recap. These two teams had almost identical over-unders because I believe they had similar records last season, and then Toronto lost some talent in the offseason. Toronto really, through their bench, through better offense, reached more towards the top, and the Wizards, through inconsistency, injury, all of those sorts of things, they faded out. So I'm sure there are some people who just completely believe that the Raptors overhaul is real, and I hope, for their sakes, I hope they're right, just because that would be too tough. But I think that this could be, like, I think this is a more interesting series than people give it credit for, because Washington has capability, they have talent all over the floor, Bradley Beal can be a good scorer, and they're not going to be fazed by this at all, because their players have, you know, both these teams have been through plenty of battles, even if they haven't been successful in all of those battles.
Yeah, this is one, again, Toronto, I have been adamant that I will not trust them in the playoffs until Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, who, for all this bench stuff, for all this, these great vibes, those guys have still got to deliver, and we have not seen that on a consistent basis. This Wizards team is certainly a team that they are well matched up against to do that. For once, DeRozan not going against a team that has much of a stopper, though we haven't seen him be that successful against Cleveland either, and they haven't had a stopper, but, you know, I'm not sure who they put on him. I guess it'll be Otto Porter. You know, they don't really have another guy that, you know, is going to punish Bradley Beal. I don't see the Wizards doing necessarily a ton of switching here. You know, maybe we'll even see John Wall get some time on DeRozan as well. The injury situation for Washington, Otto Porter had a mild right calf strain and missed the season finale. That is a little bit concerning. He also missed half of Tuesday's game. Cavs, yeah, okay, it's mild, but, you know, that's the type of thing that you can aggregate very easily. And it seems to be the type of thing that takes a couple of weeks to heal fully. So if they don't have him, they could be in big trouble. Do you trust Toronto to stop the Wizards?
Trust is a strong word for it. So no, I don't trust them, but I trust the Wizards to a point stop themselves. I mean, I don't trust Washington's offense in that way. So I feel like there will be games when Washington can get to their spots a little bit more. I think this is going to hinge a lot on kind of paralleling the OKC series a little bit, whether Wall and Beal can hit their mid-range jump shots, especially pull-ups. And I think they'll do that, you know, they'll do that sometimes, but not consistently enough to build a successful offense around it. And Toronto, generally speaking, I think that they'll do an okay job protecting the rim. And if they can get back in transition, one key element to watch here, and I think it might be the single thing I am most interested in this series, because Toronto is facing an opponent that is less, you know, less exciting than some of the other ones could have been for just for intrigue perspective, is how they use their bench, how often they use it. Because I could very well see Toronto just basically sticking with their regular season rotation until it doesn't work. And those guys, the young group with Siakam and Jakob Poeltl and DeLon and FBV, those guys play with such intensity that I could actually see them outplaying even some starter heavy lineups for Washington, because those starter heavy lineups for Washington don't necessarily have they don't have that through point unless John Wall or Bradley Beal is really having a great game.
Yeah, and we know that although they finally do have a backup in Satoransky who can be effective for Wall, and so maybe they won't have to play Wall and Beal just so many minutes. They were totally gassed, of course, by the end of that series a year ago. That said, Washington has been a pretty average team this year. Part of that is missing Wall, but they ranked 14th in offense and 15th in defense. Another interesting thing, and I think maybe we'll see John Wall with him back now. Washington dropped to 15th in transition frequency. Again, a lot of that was Wall missing time, but even when he was out there, he was not pushing the ball the way that he has in prior years. And when you notice that Washington getting into the half court, you know, they're right about league average as well in half court efficiency. And Toronto is awesome in the half court. They're the fourth ranked offense in the half court this season, the third ranked offense overall. Toronto with that bench unit loves to run as well. So I think transition for the Wizards starters and that Raptors reserve unit, that's going to be huge. Who can get into transition? Who can force a few turnovers in those situations? And that's probably the number one thing, is if they can keep John Wall out of transition, I don't expect the Wizards to score particularly efficiently in the series. I don't think they'll get shut down, mind you, but I don't expect them to score particularly well. And then that Raptors bench, if they can't get into transition, and despite how good they have been this season, they have not been as effective lately, really, since I think it was Zach Lowe had this stat that since February 1st, they're more pretty average, like +3 per 100, you know, where, and they were +20 before that. And the Raptors just in general, you know, after I think they won like 16 or 17 straight or something like that, or went like 17-1, I forgot what the run was, they really have not been the same team. But I think they are going to have to win this series defensively, because I still just don't see Lowry and DeRozan blowing up. I don't think that the Toronto is going to match their, even against what's been a pretty average defense, is going to match them. Now, the last thing I can point to on this, though, is Washington feels like a team with this group, has been around a while. All of the noise about John Wall, which the players, just because they had some initial success and they moved the ball more without Wall when he was out, masked the fact that they still are better with Wall. But if the players themselves even think that they're better without Wall, or they just like the way that they play better without Wall, you know, you don't hear the greatest things about their chemistry. So it could be one of these things where this is just an implosion series, similar to actually the way the Raptors ended up looking against Washington in 2015, ironically enough, where it could just go totally out the window for Washington. So intangibly, you've got that going up against the Raptors, their game one losing at home every year, and you know, those intangibles of playoff ghosts for them. But it is your turn to make a prediction here, unless you have anything you wanted to add.
No, that's pretty much where it is for me. I mean, I'm interested in what kind of bench units Washington pulls out there, but I'm going to go, I don't feel super confident in the number. I feel confident in the outcome. I'm going to go Raptors in 5, and I could easily see this going 6, but I think 5 is the most likely outcome for me.
This is, in theory, a better Raptors team. They won 59 games. Washington is looking like the last days of the Ottoman Empire here, the sick old man of the Eastern Conference, even though they're not that old.
Please tell me you're picking the Wizards.
No, I'm not going to pick the Wizards. I can't go that far, but I am going to go with the Toronto Raptors in 7 games, because they just, it's never easy for them.
And they never even had Zaza Pachulia to say, nothing easy. Wait, who was that Hawks series against?
Toronto
in five. You had them in Hawks? Seven. Yeah, who was that Hawks series against?
But oh, is that when Pachulia said that?
Yeah, I don't remember.
It's who too it early. I can't remember.
What. We're delirious in the morning.
Oh, when when Zaza was on the Hawks. Yeah, that was years ago.
It was years ago.
All right, so but I've got Toronto in seven. You've got Toronto in five. I mean, this is picking a lot of seven game series here. It's probably not going to go that way. Maybe I'm just like, but there's just a lot of teams here that I'm just kind of not believing in right now. Even though I do think they're going to win the series, it just doesn't feel like it's going to go easily for them. Let's turn to the series that most interests me in the Eastern Conference, and that is Bucks Celtics. And yeah, you know, the Celtics, no Gordon Hayward, no Kyrie Irving, no Marcus Smart. On talent, I mean, it's just insane how much more talent the Milwaukee Bucks have in this series. Boston will have the home court. They don't have the hope, however, of Kyrie Irving showing up in the next round to save them if they can get that far, though maybe Smart could return. He will not return by all accounts in this series. And you want to pick the Bucks so badly, and yet, you know, another one of these teams that you just cannot, I can't trust them right now. So I'm really torn on this series as of now, but let's try and break it down, and maybe that can lead me into my pick eventually.
So what I think is intriguing about this is the best player in the series is Giannis. I mean, you could argue that Giannis would be the best player in this series even if Boston were healthier, but without a healthy Boston there isn't really much of an argument there. And what Boston has in terms of defending Giannis is not a single, you know, lockdown guy, as much as Celtic Twitter yells at me that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are already lockdown guys. We'll get a better sense of that in another couple days. But what I do like a lot about Boston against Giannis is that they have a lot of guys that are kind of good enough. It's more in line with what we talked about with Harden earlier, with Minnesota's problem being that they had a lot of bad fits. I think Boston has a lot of guys that are not necessarily super inspiring, but capable enough. And the reason that that becomes more impactful is for me that Milwaukee doesn't have a lot at the center position to make opponents pay. And so you can also send a little bit of help often from that spot, because Giannis, you know, he might try to make his jump shot happen, but that's not going to be how he beats you more often not.
Yeah. And I do think in the clutch, you know, Bledsoe, Middleton, they've played well in the clutch. Giannis doesn't get as much usage, but he does have a pretty decent numbers as a Bucks team that, despite the reputation, hasn't been bad in the clutch. Obviously, the Celtics have been solid too. Certainly, you would have to say that the coaching matchup favors the Celtics here with Joe Prunty versus Brad Stevens. A lot of it comes down to, of course, whether the Boston Celtics are going to be able to score. This is the bad offense versus bad defense. However, the Bucks look a lot better when Giannis is on the floor. When he plays during the season, 3.5 net rating, that's not amazing, but the defense is actually acceptable, and it started actually getting better again as we've gone down the stretch of the season. Of course, when Giannis is off the floor, negative 5.6 net rating on the season, defense plummets to 111. Well, so Giannis could play a lot of minutes in this series. They tried to get him healthy. They had that really weird last game of the season against Philly. Don't know how hard they're really trying, although they did play their guys. You know, they could have just sat Giannis. Maybe they just wanted to get him some minutes. But, you know, they got completely blown out by 30 in the first 10 minutes of the game. I don't really take too much away from that. So, and they got the matchup that they wanted. That was the easiest. Offensively, for the Bucks, the spacing is not really there, right? And I think Boston is going to exploit that. They're going to switch. They're going to make the Bucks beat them one-on-one, and then they're going to pack the paint. Chris Middleton doesn't shoot a lot of threes. His three-point shooting is down a little bit this year anyway. Eric Bledsoe, you want to fire away from three? Go ahead. They don't really have a stretch four option. Jabari Parker, another guy who hits the three okay, but doesn't really stand out there that often. The Bucks centers have no shooting ability. Thonmaker, I don't expect him to play a ton in this series. And I think a lot of this is going to come down to how much they play Giannis at center, because I think they really can get away with that against Boston. There are not like some post-up option at center that they're worried about.
Well, and then you brought up the idea of how the Bucks have struggled with defensively without Giannis on the floor. And I think one of the other factors in that, of course, he didn't play most of the season because due to injury, but Chicago product Jabari Parker has been truly abysmal defensively this season. And he might actually be an exploitable piece to make Boston's offense look passable during those minutes. And yeah, I mean, if Terry Rozier looks like he's going to be the starter, so they're going to be relying on presumably Shane Larkin and some other unusual pieces, but they'll at least have some points to attack. And And I think this is a really fascinating series, as it turns out, for Al Horford. I think one of the elements that you and I have both really appreciated about him as a Celtic in particular is his versatility. You know, he's been providing value offensively, defensively, playing the five, playing the four. And sure, not having Kyrie out there is going to limit some of what he does offensively, just because Horford is better with a good foil. I think that's part of what, you know, a lot of times with big men, that really does help. So he has a chance to really show it. However, having that opportunity generally means there's downside risk as well, and we could see that too.
Another reason to believe in the Bucks a little bit more is both Malcolm Brogdon and Matthew Dellavedova returned. Not sure how great those guys are looking as of yet, but when you don't have to play Jason Terry as much, those guys aren't great three-point shooters, but they're probably at least a little bit better than some of the guys that they were playing a little bit. You don't have to play Sterling Brown as much. Brown has been okay for a rookie, but he's still a rookie. Maybe that helps to just not have as many weak links in your rotation. And that also, again, gives you more ability to play Giannis at center. Now, the numbers on Giannis at center have not been great. When he is at center, they have a negative 8.5 net rating and 232 possessions. And Cleaning the Glass also lists Jabari Parker as a center over Giannis when those two play together, or they list Parker as a bigger player, which I don't necessarily agree with. But if you look at those numbers, when Parker is on there and Giannis is at center, the differential is awful as well. Negative 15.3 net rating in about 100 possessions, so a full game's worth. So Giannis at center has not been the panacea that might have been hoped for. You know, some of those lineups featured Sterling Brown and Jason Terry, and so not some of the players that we could expect to be out there necessarily. But Giannis at center hasn't been the panacea. I think they still need to try it, just because their smalls are so much better, and they just have to get some more spacing on the floor. I mean, Tyler Zeller is going to get killed defensively. Henson, can protect the rim a little bit. And then the other reason that I like that, especially if you have Brogdon out there, is being able to switch 1 through 5. And I think that can work really well against this Boston offense that runs a lot of actions, relies on a lot of system type of plays to get guys open. Switching could take that away. And, they don't have Kyrie Irving. They don't have the dynamic one-on-one score. So if you switch everything and just make them beat you over the top, or make them beat you one-on-one, it avoids a lot of these communication breakdowns as well that lead to open threes. Boston really likes to get up threes, so that's going to be a concern for this Bucks defense. So that's another reason I would like to try Giannis at center, even if, the numbers have not been great on that this year.
You bring up a good point in terms of personnel, and it ties in with this idea of, who's going to beat you one-on-one. And Jason Tatum, I think, could actually be a key in this series. I really like his ability to create one-on-one against inferior opposition, and that could certainly happen at moments in this series, just depending on how aggressively and who he gets put on and all that kind of stuff. So I'm excited to see it and to see those young guys. I mean, I think we talked about when the renewed diagnosis came out about how there were some silver linings for this. And I think this actually ends up being a pretty solid series in terms of those silver linings, even if the Celtics end up losing it. Just those guys will get an opportunity to show it. And whether they fly out of the nest or whether they plummet to the earth, will either piece of that will be valuable. And I'm excited to see it. And this is a series, I can imagine that there will be a lot of people who will not enjoy these games, but I think the two of us will absolutely enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, so much of it is going to be whether Terry Rozier, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum are going to be able to create anything off the dribble. That generally, you'll see these series get smaller as you go through the series and get more basic from a strategic standpoint, and just, going at the matchup, trusting your playmakers to make plays. And, maybe this could be a coming out party for Tatum and Brown, who's played very well since the return from the concussion. Rozier shooting the ball well from three, although, not a guy who's going to play make, get to the rim and finish as of now. And then, Boston still is going to get those threes up. They don't have a lot of great three-point shooters, but they're going to get those up. And are they going to go in? Another thing to look for here, the Bucks remain a poor defensive rebounding team. I think especially at the beginning of games, if they're going to start Baines and Horford, Baines could have an effect on the offensive glass. We noted that he had those 9 offensive rebounds in 20 minutes last night against the Nets, who are another kind of skinny guys at center, bad defensive rebounding team like the Bucks are. And then what is the lineup going to be for Brad Stevens to close games? Does he go Horford at center, Marcus Morris? He's another guy maybe who could give them just a little bit of ISO scoring as well. Tatum, Brown, and then Rozier. Is that what they're going to close with? Do some more switching themselves? Does Baines get in there? That's going to be an interesting question for the Celtics as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Marcus Morris. He was going to be a point that I wanted wanted to bring up, because I think he's very intriguing in this series on both ends of the floor, because defensively I consider his best attribute to be his strength, and that could actually work pretty well against the Bucks in a couple
I like him on Giannis. I like him on Giannis.
I think he could do a good job on Chris Middleton as well in certain circumstances, like on a switch. Like Middleton will just try to back him down and he just won't get anywhere, and he'll shoot that, you know, fade away from 22 feet, that sort of thing. I could see Morris being useful there.
Yeah.
And just having more guys.
In fairness, Middleton is shooting like over 50% on mid-rangers this year, though. Yeah, sure. I don't like that matchup on Morris specifically.
Yeah, I mean, Morris has more length to contest that. So yeah, I think it's just an interesting series, and I think it could be one that changes as these teams adjust, and I'm excited to see an interim head coach deal with it and Brad Stevens. And, you know, I think it could be useful for Stevens this time to know what he has, and generally speaking, unless Marcus Smart comes back in this series, to know that those guys aren't limited. Because I think one of the elements that we didn't appreciate until a little bit later was what Isaiah Thomas he was dealing with last year. And I mean, Isaiah going as gamely as he did, and also, of course, the tragic death of his sister. I mean, there was a lot weighing on that Celtics team last year, and them getting summarily trounced at the end when they got to the Cavs is its own thing. But I'm excited to see, kind of like with Quinn Snyder, like, I think this is, as crazy as it sounds, I think this is closest to a fair evaluation of Brad Stevens as a coach as we've gotten so far. And I mean, it'll be another year or two until we fully get that for him as a playoff coach, but this could be a good little test to see what kind of wrinkles he can throw in, where, what lineups they want to do, what the closing thing they're going to be. I think there's a lot of nuance to this series, and it'll be, you know, kind of an aficionado's one, but I'm going to love it.
Last point here. This is another series where Milwaukee, not a great team in the half court, but third in the NBA, 18.4% of their possessions in transition. And you know that Giannis in particular is unstoppable in transition. Jabari is great in transition as well. Can Boston keep Milwaukee out of transition? That's going to be huge. I don't trust this Milwaukee offense to score against Boston in the half court necessarily. And then what is Jabari Parker's role going to be? You know, this will be his first time playing in the playoffs. Both of the seasons that they have made it in his career, when he's actually been healthy at the end of the year, he's been out with rehabbing a torn ACL. So, and we've seen what he's done to their defense. If I'm Boston, I would try to involve Jabari as much as I can. You know, I don't think he can stop Jason Tatum in particular, if they can get that matchup at times, get him switched onto a Terry Rozier maybe. You know, I think the Bucks, you know, despite Jabari's looking pretty good from a scoring standpoint, he has not been a positive player for them this year. He breaks down their defense much more than, you know, if he's not out there. They've got Brogdon back now. They've got Dele. I would want to go more in the direction of playing those guys, playing Tony Snell, and then just hope that Giannis can take you home to some degree, that Eric Bledsoe. I mean, they've got enough shot, Middleton, they've got enough shot creators on this team, and Jabari really opens the door defensively for them. It is your turn to go first?
I believe it is yours, but I'm happy to go first.
No, if it's mine, no, because I trust
last
you on this.
The last series we picked was Raptors, and I went Raptors at 5 first. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Okay. I'm going to pick the Milwaukee Bucks in 7 games. I just think Celtics, it's going to be a weird series. Yeah. This is a weird series. It's a weird team.
Oh, it's so hard.
And it would be so Bucks for them to, like, I mean, I don't think they'll retain Prent. Maybe they would if they win the first round series, but like, to just not make the changes that they need to make with this team, with this roster, maybe even at head coach, although it's going to be such a job that's going to have so much star power that you think they might just do it anyway, even if they do win this series. But you could totally see them, much like, you know, the Sixers in 2012 winning the first round series and then like using that as an excuse to not make the changes that need to be made, and then, you know, the franchise is further hamstrung. Like, that would be so Bucks. This was really tough. I mean, I don't want to believe in this Bucks team. They're another one of these teams I was like, man, I'm just so out of them. But God, like, if the Boston just could score at all, I would feel so much better about things. And it would not shock me if the Celtics win, but I am going to go with the Bucks. So yeah, all right, that's two series that we differ on now. This is fun.
Well, and here, so the reason I'm picking the Celtics in 7, this is a very strange piece of logic, but it has served me at various moments in the past, which is this. It's, which way would I feel stupider if I got it wrong? And for me, it's like, okay, one team has an advantage of coach. I think they have some intriguing versatility, all that kind of stuff. And I don't trust the Bucks. So it's like, so I'm sitting there going, I was imagining we podcast on like Thursday night of next week, me sitting there going, why did I pick the Bucks? Like, like, why did I do this? They're down 2-0. They looked too listless. Boston just out executes them. They're able to get back in transition. They're beasting on the offensive glass, things like that. And so generally, if I have a feeling on that, what that speaks to me is saying there's something that I'm not accounting for that I probably should be. And I think Milwaukee has a significant talent advantage. And I'm not factoring this into my decision, but we can call this a sub-prediction. It is my feeling that Marcus Smart will play in this series. I think he'll play either in 6, 7, or both, depending on how this works out. And I don't think he swings it. There are some interesting offensive challenges bringing Smart in, but it could be just an emotional lift. And, you know, who knows? Maybe Boston will really need that. So I do not feel good at all about picking Celtics in 7, but I think I would feel worse about picking Bucks in 7. So I'm going with Celtics.
Philly and Miami now. The latest on Joel Embiid is that he is doubtful for Game 1, but could in theory play. We saw him out on the floor shooting around. I mean, it seems like one of these things where he has passed the concussion protocol. Joel said it's unlikely he'll play in Game 1, but there's still a chance. This game is on Sunday, so that gives him more of a chance to get there. But I do still like Philly's matchup here anyway. I mean, JJ Redick did sit out with lower back tightness, but in that last game against Milwaukee. But I mean, you know, Philly has won, 16 straight here. Very difficult to pick against them. But I do think that Miami is a team that can cause them some problems offensively when Philly is on offense.
Yeah, I was going to say, on that end of the floor, Miami can certainly do it. And I would say that's Miami's greatest strength, is just getting teams' opponents out of sort in their own offense. And Josh Richardson could end up being big in this series, not by taking out the other team's primary ball handler, because I don't think they'll put him on Ben Simmons, but because he can defend JJ Redick and largely take him out, especially if Redick is dealing with the aforementioned back issue. I could see that. And we've seen Redick
really struggle in the playoffs against Klay Thompson. We've seen it going way back to 2014. We've seen him really struggle last year against Utah. They really were able to take him away, and I think he's a guy who you can prepare for more in the playoffs. Just be, hey, we're not going to leave him at all. And you know, then if they can take him out, he's been a huge part of why they've been able to sustain without Embiid. So, and Miami, as you mentioned, they just have so many of these long guys who compete. And then I think Justice Winslow has played some of the best defense that I've seen this year on Ben Simmons. You know, Simmons is not just an absolute blow by guy. He's not a guy who's going to be able to rise up over Winslow. You know, a lot of it is strength. Winslow can move his feet, stay in front of him. Simmons trying to post up Winslow did not go well in the games that I saw. And then we've seen even Hassan Whiteside have some success against Joel Embiid. And Joel, you can't expect that he's going to be 100% coming off that fractured eye.
Yeah, I think the amount of options that Miami has defensively makes this a very stressful series. I think this is going to be the ugliest first round series in terms of the quality of basketball, partially because each of these teams
We just talked about Bucks Celtics.
I think this is going to be an uglier series. I think because that's what both of these teams kind of want to do. There will be. And so it'll be great for the Twitter NBA show. Keep it hashtag Twitter NBA show. Follow Nate Duncan NBA on Periscope and on Twitter. And I think that it will be a little bit daunting in that way. But what I like a lot, this is going to be a great test for Philly of kind of everybody else on their team. Dario Saric could be absolutely a huge swing factor in this if he can really deliver, because they're going to need creation from somebody. It's going to be a team effort defensively. And Saric is, you know, he's having a wonderful season. I think it has to be appreciated how important he has been to their success. And also, even if Joel Embiid is not Joel Embiid, just having some sort of, at least early in the series, just being able to apportion those minutes other places, I think will be valuable for Philadelphia. You know, the idea of that an injury forces just puts more strain on your rotation, I think that's important. But we can also pivot to when Miami has the ball, and I think this is where I'm really concerned for the Heat. They just don't have that many dynamic creators on this squad, and the Sixers, I think, have a good collection of players to make a narrow team in terms of creators really work, and they can just force other guys to beat them, and I do not trust those other Heat players to do that a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah, you know, Dwayne Wade, I could see him actually having somewhat of an effect in this series. series if they try to go at JJ Redick with him. You know, maybe he could actually be effective in the post that way. You know, how much is Spo gonna play? Wade, is he gonna be closing games for this team? I would say that he probably shouldn't be. I think the Heat need to win this defensively, and Wade really is going to compromise their defense. Although, you know, he has a history of playing better defensively in the playoffs during this last phase of his career. You know, the season series was 2-2. A lot of these were close. Finally, the Heat actually blew out the Sixers. Was this the Sixers' last loss, actually?
It might have been. It was right around that time.
Yeah, March 8th. So pretty close. And that was the game where Whiteside had 26 points at 9-12 from the field. He even had two assists in that game, Danny.
I wonder how many threes Most Bates hit that day.
So much of this, I think, is going to come down to Šarić and Covington's ability to hit threes. I think that they're really going to sell out to stop Redick. I mean, that would almost be my number one thing on the scouting report. And then the other thing for the Heat is keeping the Sixers out of transition. We talked about just how incredible Ben Simmons is as a grab-and-go guy. The way he pushes the ball, teams feel like they have to load him in transition. He can find shooters. He's always pushing it up, even on makes, as you so enjoy. So that's going to be a huge thing as well. And Hassan Whiteside, as in his transition defense, he's going to probably be going to the offensive glass. If he doesn't get it, he's going to be behind the play. That's going to give some opportunities. I don't think this is going to be the ugliest series. I think that's probably going to be Golden State and San Antonio in terms of just like the rock fight quality of it. But and obviously Boston and Milwaukee could be like that too. But I do see this one being a defensive struggle. I mean, these are two top five type defensive teams, have a lot of defensive talent. And so, you know, if you are Eric Spoelstra, you know, what are some of the strategic dilemmas that you are going to have to work out here for the Heat?
Well, I think you know that a primary focus of your defense is going to be stopping Ben Simmons. But, you know, if they run those snug pick and rolls with Simmons and Embiid that we really liked, especially early in the season, how are they going to handle that? When do they want to use Hassan Whiteside versus using Kelly Olynyk versus using Bam Adebayo? Lots of really interesting elements there. But I think the biggest part of this whole thing is going to be even just a basic one. If you're putting Josh Richardson on JJ Redick, where is Goran Dragic going to play defensively? And how can Philly try to take advantage of that? And like, how
Covington
going to be to get help?
You probably put him on Covington, I guess.
Maybe. I mean, I think Covington can just, I think he'll have the confidence to shoot over him. Granted, that might not, might not necessarily be well suited. But yeah, I think that's going to be particularly intriguing for me. And then also, what of their kind of support players? Wayne Ellington, is he going to close games? How much is he going to play? I think he unlocks more offensively. But as you said earlier, I think Miami, if they're going to win this series, they're going to win it defensively. And so then how are they going to use that? Are they Ellington versus Wade and everything else?
This really is the perfect matchup for Hassan Whiteside. You don't know how healthy he is with that hip injury. You know, he didn't close their game the other day against Toronto. Dragic actually missed that with some knee soreness, but he says he's going to be okay, but that's still something to monitor as well. But defensively, Hassan Whiteside, what is his weakness? Defending and pick and roll. Well, Philly basically has no one who runs a traditional pick and roll. They run the fewest pick and rolls in the league. Joel Embiid is not the shooter this year that he was last year to draw Whiteside out of the paint. And again, we'll see what Embiid's health level is and then how much they're really going to want to go to him. They found this way of playing with him out that's been so successful too. So that's obviously a huge question mark. The other thing for Spoelstra, you know, is just who's going to play at shooting guard. Is it going to be Wade? Is it going to be Wayne Ellington, who I think they're just going to have to play to get some shooting on the floor? We know Josh Richardson is going to be out there. James Johnson or Justice Winslow, hard to play both of those guys at the same time as well. And definitely, you know, Justice Winslow and Wade together, that's tough to play those guys together. Where does Tyler Johnson fit in? Is he going to play the two? Is he just going to be a backup point guard to Dragic? That's a question. And then Kelly Olynyk, they desperately need his shooting to open the floor for some of these other guys. But this, as we said, this is a good series for Whiteside. And, you know, Olynyk, I think, is a good fit. Is Bam Adebayo going to play at all? You know, maybe not. He's really more useful as a switch guy. That's not really that useful when Philly doesn't run a lot of pick and roll. So I'd expect to see him minimize to some degree in this series. But yeah, I mean, there's just so many moving parts for this Miami team. And I think it's been, especially with Wade coming back, it's been a little bit of a struggle to get the right guys, get the right combinations out there for Spo. And hopefully he will be able to mix and match throughout the series to find something here. But ultimately, Philly, even without Embiid, has just been so on fire. And yeah, that's been against a lot of tanking teams. They've had been shot out of a cannon. They've been playing so much harder than the opposition. This is also going to be Brett Braun's playoff debut. While he's been an amazing coach this year and has a lot of experience with San Antonio, you know, this is his first time in the big chair in a playoff series, making the adjustments, playing at the end of games against an Eric Spoelstra who is extremely experienced going back to 2008. So, you know, there are some reasons to think that Miami can be pretty competitive in this series.
Yeah, and I'll just jump into my prediction. That's why I'm going Sixers in seven. I think that it could be six, and if Embiid were starting the series healthy, I think that's where I would have gone. But Miami is going to make a lot of these games competitive defensively. I think the clutch execution is going to be important. And just neither one of these teams, you know, Miami is such a weird mix because some of their guys have a ton of playoff experience, other guys don't have as much. But I think that Philly, you know, they're just such neophytes. I think that's a little bit of a concern just in terms of going this, and their coaches as well, of course. So I'm going to go Sixers and seven, as it's a close call, but that's where I'm going.
This is yet another one of these series that when it's a defensive rock fight, as I expect this to be throughout large portions of the series, what's the difference maker? Transition. And Philly with Ben Simmons, Markel Fultz has really pushed the pace as well. They've been great when he's been out there. And you know, I think he could be useful there, though, again, the lack of shooting from him is a concern. So I do like Philly in this. I mean, they've just been so good. And unlike Utah, as we talked about, we know why they've been so good. They have a lot of talent, a lot of star talent that's been awesome. And especially if Embiid is healthy, you know, I think you have to like them. I'm going to go with Philly in six. I do think that the Heat can make this difficult. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, Miami just won't be able to score enough against Philadelphia. This is a great, great defense, especially once Embiid gets back, that I just don't see. You know, the Heat will try to get up a lot of threes. Maybe in a couple of games they'll hit enough of them that they'll be able to play well. I think their crowd will be into it as to the extent that a Miami crowd can be, but I think they like this team. They like the underdog nature of this team. So I'm and Philly's crowd is going to be going completely insane also. So this should be a fun series from that standpoint, but I'm going to go Philly six here. Last series now, New Orleans and Portland. Portland with the home court advantage in this 3-6 matchup by virtue of having won last night. They're the three seed, and I think the place to start here is with Damian Lillard and what is New Orleans going to try to do to defend him. Certainly it's an interesting matchup. Anthony Davis is capable of getting out on the floor. Portland wants to run pick and roll with Nurkic. That's their guy to set a good screen, roll to the basket. But how they're going to try and do that coverage, are they going to switch it all? Are they going to have AD get way up to the level of the screen? Are they going to have him drop back and say, hey, Drew Holiday, you get into Dame? Are they even going to have Holiday guard Dame? Are they going to try and put him on CJ and erase CJ? All those very interesting questions for me. That is the key strategic point in this series, as far as I'm concerned.
I agree that that's the key strategic one. And there's another kind of cascading part of it, which is if the Blazers are good enough with Dame out there that you want to trap it, then I would put Drew Holiday on CJ and defend him single coverage and try to take CJ out as best
I like
you can
it.
And with and so that way you're kind of mitigating in both directions, maybe trying to get CJ more in one-on-one. And while he certainly can create in those matchups, I actually think Drew Holiday could do a great job of getting into him. And maybe then, depending on if it's Rondo or Etuan or however they want to make it work, there are a lot of different directions they could go with it. And yeah, on that end of the floor, I mean, the other just massive question for Portland offensively is, and this has been true for 2 years, I mean, the last 2 years now, is what are they going to get from everyone else? And Nurkic, I mean, that game against Houston was really eye-opening in terms of the way, the aggressiveness and the speed with which he attacked switches and mismatches and everything like that. I think that is a necessary component of this from Portland's perspective. But Al-Farouq Aminu, I mean, how many games have we seen in person, including for a lot of these, seen the Portland's fortune swing on whether his jump shot is falling and whether he has confidence in it?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question here to me. Evan Turner, of course, is another one. He'll probably start, but will that allow them to get enough offense on the floor? And then for New Orleans, you know, we've seen Anthony Davis start the last couple of games with Mirotic up front. Is that going to continue? Nurkic is kind of a big body. You could even maybe experiment, you know, this would be more of a Warriors kind of thing to do, but you'll recall Alvin Gentry was on the Warriors in 2015. What if you experimented having Anthony Davis guard Evan Turner when he's out there and just say, hey, AD, you know, we're going to just not guard Turner. You, I mean, he's not to the level level that Tony Allen was in that Memphis series in 2015 with the Warriors, but say, hey, AD, you can just roam off of him, mess everything up at the rim, and, you know, we're going to switch a lot of stuff other than that and force you to try and beat us one-on-one with AD behind helping. That could be a strategy they could try. I don't think they would do that, but it's something that occurred to me. But I think for Stotts, the key strategic thing offensively is going to be, you know, Turner obviously gives them more defensively, not really a particular guy for him to guard. You know, maybe you could try putting him on Drew Holiday. Holiday would have the quickness advantage there, and Holiday has played it exceedingly well, but there isn't that one guy on the wing that you feel like Turner needs to guard. So maybe, and New Orleans loves to go small as well. They'll play Etuan Moore at the three a lot. Darius Miller is not a big guy, so who you're worried about putting someone smaller on. So I could see this series getting small very quickly, more lineups with Portland going with Shabazz Napier rather than Turner to get some more scoring on the floor. And it could be maybe more of a small series, more of an offensive series, just because neither of these teams has anyone who scares you at the three where you have to have size at that position.
Yeah, this is another one of those, a phrase my friend Arturo Goletti uses sometimes, is styles makes fight, and in terms of a playoff series. And that's part of the reason this one will be different, is that neither one of them, like, they both have a weakness at a specific place that you have to counter. And I'm interested. I think something Gentry is going to do, again, this is kind of paralleling time with Golden State. I wouldn't be surprised if they start big, but go away from it very quickly in games. So like maybe like 5 minutes at the beginning of each half with Emeka Okafor or whoever, and then just basically run away from it at that point, just to give AD a little bit of a rest at the start of it. But I love your idea with Turner. I don't think having him guard that would actually be in some ways similar to what Davis did back when he was at Kentucky. And I think that's the best defensive role I've ever seen him in. And so I'm a full supporter of it. I don't think we'll see it, because that's, you know, there are certain things that are a little bit too far out of the box to predict to happen, even though I think it would be effective. But we can turn to the other side of the ball. And I think in many ways, this is equally fascinating, because I think part of what's challenging for me is I have a much clearer idea of what Portland wants to make New Orleans do, which is, you know, take shots from the mid-range, contest at the rim, try to lower the number of three-pointers they take. I'm more sure of that than I am what New Orleans really wants, where they think their bread is going to be buttered in a series.
Yeah, and you would imagine that there's going to be, they'll be going under on Rondo. That's going to be fascinating. Of, is playoff Rondo going to show up? I mean, you remember he was awful all last year for the Bulls, and then he was great in those first two games, and then he was done with that injury. I can't remember whether it was his elbow or his hand. I think it might have been both, actually. So is he going to be able to make them pay for not guarding him? You know, in a playoff series, that's going to be a big focus. And then we noted how Portland likes to take away the mid-range. Well, AD, one of the best pick-and-pop players, one of the best mid-range players, are they going to have to change up a little bit to take that away? Is he just going to be so hot for mid-range, or are they just willing to live with that? Yusuf Nurkic's foul trouble could be another issue as well. Is he going to be able to keep up with Davis? He's got pretty quick feet, but certainly a guy who can foul a lot. You know, you could see him trying to close out on AD trying to do that drive to his left where he shoots that floater going to his left, and Nurkic committing some fouls. That certainly is something that could happen. And, you know, then are they going to try and do Aminu? I mean, I definitely think that Aminu could probably do a little better job on AD than Nurkic just one-on-one. But then in most of New Orleans lineups, you're asking Nurkic to now guard Nikola Mirotic. And Mirotic's three-point shooting has come on lately. It's been awful with the Pels most of the way. You know, he's a very, very hit-or-miss player from three. So I think offensively, his three-point shooting could be a huge, huge key for the Pels. And another interesting thing to watch in this is offensive rebounding. We've seen Nurkic play really well on the offensive glass at times when he's motivated. This will really be his first chance in the playoffs, because he had that fracture last year, only played a few minutes and wasn't himself. And New Orleans basically never, ever goes to the offensive glass, or last in the NBA in percentage of possessions that they get an offensive rebound on. And Portland, you know, they're not amazingly high, but I think that could be more of a focus here in the playoffs with Ed Davis, with Zach Collins on that second unit, and with Nurkic. So that might be a way for Portland to get an advantage, especially because Portland does not ever run. They are last in the league in transition frequency. And when you combine that with the Pels never hitting the offensive glass and trying to get back, other than Rondo's occasional forays that don't seem to work out that often, you know, you would imagine that they're going to be able to force Portland to play in the half court most of the time.
You brought up Ed Davis. I don't think, generally speaking, bench players are overstated in terms of their playoff impact, and I agree with that in this case, but I just think he's a hard guy to counter, and I will be interested to see whether there are a game or two that he can just get those rebounds. And giving up an offensive rebound is, it's not only about giving the extra possession, but it's also just so dispiriting for a team, especially if you played good first shot defense. And they can be emotional pivot points, and I don't completely trust Portland's, you know, non-starter offense yet, so that could end up, you know, being important in certain circumstances. And I mean, and from a coaching standpoint, Terry Stotts, I think he's done a pretty good job in the playoffs overall. They have, you know, they haven't made it super far very often, but I think a lot of that's they've been playing teams that are better than them. I mean, there's no shame in losing to the Golden State Warriors, though it should be noted that I think they would have lost to the Clippers if the Clippers hadn't gotten as hurt as they. So I think it's going to be, and then Gentry, you know, he's been an assistant. I don't believe, is this his first time or second? This is second, because Monty coached when they made it, correct? When they made it back in 2015, or was that Gentry?
So no, Monty Williams was the coach at that point. He got fired and they brought in Gentry after they, because remember they lost to the Warriors in the first round when Gentry was on the Warriors, and Gentry does have playoff experience though, you know, going way back in his career, and then obviously 2010 with the Suns, he made it to the West Finals, so he definitely has experience. I think he's done a nice job this year. Chris Finch has been useful for them offensively. I mean, this is going to be, we're going to see some nice offensive stuff in this series between Stotts, Gentry, Finch. They've got a lot of fun sets that we could see them run. Mo Harkless, his health a key here. March 28th is when it was announced he would be out 2 to 3 weeks. Obviously, we are past the 2 week point now. He could potentially return as soon as the middle of next week. So that's looking more like a 3 week timetable. We'll see again, you know, how effective can he be coming back from a knee surgery that quickly. We are, of course, always skeptical of that. And his shooting, while he was really hitting right when he went down, you know, is he going to be able to hit there coming in off of that layoff? Even if he does return in the middle of the series, can he get back into shape? You know, it's hard to expect that they'll get much of a contribution from him. Even if he is able to return, he's probably on a minutes limit. I doubt they start him. So I do think it's going to have to be Evan Turner. It's going to have to be Napier. They've even gotten some minutes out of Wade Baldwin, who's been added a little bit of a different look defensively, pressuring the ball, although he doesn't do much on offense. They converted him from a two-way player earlier in the season after he was cut by Memphis. So a lot of moving pieces here for Portland, and you just wonder whether they can get enough offense and whether, you know, Dame and CJ are really going to be able to carry them home. Anything else you want to talk about here before we look at predictions?
I think just who you talked about, kind of how Portland resolves their rotational issues, but how much Gentry trusts Nikola Mirotic, who they end up doing, what Solomon Hill's role is in all this. Sheik Diallo, I mean, he's had some real nice moments a little bit, but he could also be marginalized just as playoff series get smaller, something we're all familiar with. But I mean, I think this might be the series that I in terms of quality of play will be or enjoyability of play will be the highest in this year, in this first round series. There will of course be some later round ones that we like better, so I'm looking forward to that. I think the way to start with predictions is this is the series that I am the least sure about, not only in terms of winner but also in terms of duration.
Yeah, you know, I could see it going either way. I mean, New Orleans doesn't feel like they're as good as Portland. They just haven't been in the playoffs, but they do have what I think people would say is consensus the best player. I mean, and if you look at the surrounding talent, if you take out Lillard and you take out Anthony Davis, you know, I think New Orleans still matches up reasonably well here in terms of just the overall talent on the floor. CJ would probably have to be the second best player, but I think Drew, you know, when you throw in Drew's two-way contributions, those two guys have been pretty close. This year has been a little bit of a down year from CJ compared to last year. And then Harkless is out. You know, if you had, I mean, Portland, when they were winning all those games and they had Harkless, you know, I think I would pick them to win this series relatively handily. Now, you know, I'm not sure which of these teams is better. New Orleans has been playing better of late, and I think I ultimately will default to Portland in seven due to the home court. Portland is really, really difficult to beat at home, so that's the direction I'm going here. But you know, I could even see, you know, New Orleans winning this in six very easily.
Five would probably be pushing it a little bit unless something structural changes. And I mean, I think they will really miss Harkless. If I knew he would even be 100% by like game three, then I would be more comfortable picking the Blazers. I'm still uncomfortably picking the Blazers in seven like you are, and home court will be significant here. And also just, I think I have a bigger sense of how Portland is going to do this, you know, like how they're going to run their offense and everything else like that. And for New Orleans, there are certain wrinkles, certain elements of this that they could throw in that I think would be very hard for Portland to handle. But I am not as confident just because we haven't seen it. You know, Chris Finch, this is the first playoff series he has been in as an assistant there. Davis, his only playoff series was that, you know, four game sweep against the Warriors when I think played very well overall. It was just that surrounding talent wasn't really good enough. So I absolutely could see New Orleans win the series. I mean, I think in terms of outcome, this is the closest to a coin flip that exists. But it's kind of like there are parallels with the Sixers series where a player that I think is very important isn't healthy. I'm going to go Blazers up.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think, is this the only one we agree on?
No, I think we agreed on Cavs in five. And then I think we agreed on, there was, I think, one other one maybe, but it's close. I mean, and I'm excited about that part of this. I think a lot of these series aren't going to be super, you know, they're going to be more in the rock fight realm, but at least they're close rock fights. And that's a little bit more fun.
Yeah. And I will say that I have a much worse feel. I mean, you can tell, I think when you pick a series to be four or five games or even six, you feel pretty confident about what the result is going to be. But just with all the injuries right now, a lot of teams with different looks that haven't been in the playoffs, you really just don't know what to expect from so many of these teams. And that's why this is going to be a fun playoffs. You know, I mean, I still looks like Cleveland is a big favorite in the East, and Golden State, things worked out well enough for them that I expect them to get there to the West Finals against Houston, you know, if Steph can come back for round two, and maybe even if he can't, you know, if he can come back middle of round two. So I think a lot of this stuff in the beginning, you know, and then who that second, because now with Toronto and Cleveland on the same side of the bracket, you know, who the hell is going to come out of that 2-7 side? You know, is it going to be Philly? Could it be Milwaukee? I mean, could it be Miami? I mean, there's just like, you know, Philly certainly looks like the favorite there, but, you know, with their injury issues, you can't say that that's necessarily a given. So like that side of the East is going to be fascinating. We're going to have a total surprise team in the Eastern Conference Finals based on how this is working out. So it's going to be an awesome playoffs. Can't wait to get started. And we know a little bit more about the schedule now than we did when we recorded last night. On Saturday, we will definitely be doing Twitter NBA show. We will not do the Warriors game, but I think our main game that day will be Miami and Philly. And we'll probably do the end of Washington and Toronto as well if it's close for the Twitter NBA show. So check that out if you're not familiar. Basically, Danny and I do play-by-play, and you sync up with us. We got a little clock in the corner so you can sync up your DVR. We got instructions that sometimes work on how to pause the stream if you're a streamer and we're ahead of you. And then we take questions during commercials. So that's really fun. We're really trying to build that up. Going to try and do it as many nights as we can mentally stand. And then the next day as well, we're definitely going to do the Indiana-Cleveland game, but we might even check in on all the games because that's Sunday. All the best matchups, it seems like, are on that Sunday. So can't wait to get started there, and looking forward to spending these playoffs with y'all. Talk to y'all then. Looking forward to spending these playoffs with y'all. Talk to y'all then.